Hey ladies, welcome back to another episode of Juicy Femininity for Black Girls, where we obsess over giving women the tools to create joy and to raise their vibration in the areas of self-care, relationships, and money. I am your host, energy healer and master life coach, LaTanya Carla, and I'm basically your new level up homegirl, so welcome to the space. Before we take a deep dive into today's episode, I want to remind you to be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you've enjoyed the podcast so far. You can also head over to hvlclub.higherlivingspace.com to sign up for our exclusive membership community, which is filled with gems that I have curated just for you to help you cultivate life-changing healing and wellness. So let's get right into today's episode. You know, something that I've learned that has been so key in the past couple of years is when you do the work that raises your vibration, you can change the reality of your life. Like, I truly believe this. You will look at the world differently and you will attract more of what you want. And so in this episode where I'm talking about raising your vibration after heartbreak, this is something that's just really come to my mind, that a lot of the reason why people struggle after heartbreak is that you kind of just get stuck in a place where it's hard to really raise your vibration. But if you keep that the focus, if you're thinking about that, it can make that time much shorter and much less devastating. So that's what I really want to talk about today. Like, how do you get out of that space, that space in your head that, you know, affects your body, affects your mind, can affect your focus, that can really cause a lot of havoc in your life if you're not able to get control of it, or at least channel it in a way that is productive and helpful for you. So first thing I want to talk about is how you get to a place where you're even lowering your vibration in a relationship, right? And the truth is, no one can actually lower your vibration. You lower your vibration from choices that you make, which include giving your power away. And if you've given your power away, then that's codependency. And I'm going to talk more about that in this episode as well. In order to recover from this, in order to be able to use this moment as a lesson to improve your life, I've made a list of a few things that can really help transition you in this season of your life. So number one is to do your shadow work. And I hear about this all the time. People talk about this online, but you know, I hear it mentioned from time to time, but no one really talks about what that really means and how do you actually do that. And shadow work really just means confronting the parts of yourself that you don't necessarily like or you avoid. You know, it's understanding the parts of yourself that are difficult to accept, right? Like, a breakup is a great time to really evaluate the shadow in you. So like, say for instance, in your relationship, your partner may have been telling you that you're not a great listener. Now, that doesn't mean that you should just take that as fact, you know what I mean? But maybe that a breakup is a point where you can look at that and start to think about it, like, am I a bad listener? You know, maybe there are times where you have felt like you are, or you can think of moments where you weren't the best listener. And maybe that's something that you want to improve. Sometimes it's something that is deeper and more ingrained. I feel like if you're a bad listener, you can always learn to be a better listener. But sometimes there are things that, you know, have been there from your early childhood and are just like ingrained in your subconscious, right? And comes from experiences and trauma that you may not even remember that happened so young and so early in life. It doesn't mean that those things, you can't recover from those things, but sometimes those things can be so normal and natural in your life for so long that it can be harder to remove that thing about yourself. But if you are aware of it, and if you understand your triggers, and you understand when those things happen, then you can put practices and, you know, other things in place that experience or that quality about yourself, that shadow part of you, doesn't always have to show up, right? Maybe you get angry, you know, maybe it has to do with anger, and maybe you had some experience in your past that you have certain triggers. Maybe you've experienced some things in your past that can be triggered. And by doing your shadow work, you can know what those triggers are and prevent yourself from responding in the same way. Doesn't mean that trauma is no longer there. It just means that you've learned how to maneuver it and move in your life in a better way. The second one is to heal any codependency issues. So I mentioned that a little earlier in the beginning of this. Changing yourself in hopes that doing so will make other people happy creates a lack of boundaries. And it also makes validation from other people more important than it should be. You should really become your own source of validation and not depend on other people to validate you. And so codependency can be rooted in low self-esteem or low confidence. And so in order to feel confident and feel, you know, secure, you look for people to validate you or tell you who you are. This really is hard to accept for some people. And I think that's why a lot of people still get stuck in codependency relationships or issues longer than they should, or longer than they really need to, because if they really were able to confront this, which shadow work will help you do, if you have codependency issues, this is one of those things that you can start to think about and confront in your shadow work. But becoming your own source of validation is really key, and that can help in not lowering your vibration in a relationship, or being able to recover from heartbreak or a relationship ending. The next one is to recognize when you're internalizing negative experiences. Internalizing negative experiences is like when something negative happens in the relationship. Say your partner cheats, right? Say the reason why you broke up is because your partner cheated. And so you've internalized that as there's something wrong with you. You're not good enough. If you had done this, that, and the third, this wouldn't have happened. And the truth is, that's a negative experience. It doesn't have to be your story and be your identity. It doesn't have to affect how you identify yourself. Are you a perfect person? No. Does that mean that you don't have to take any accountability in the relationship? No. It does not mean that everyone has to take accountability in a relationship, but in that accountability, everybody has their own burdens to bear. And so taking on a negative experience, as internalizing a negative experience, is taking accountability for something that is not yours to take, right? If someone cheated on you, they need to take accountability for that, because that's an action that they chose to take, a path that they chose to take when there were many paths. If they weren't happy in the relationship, or there was something that they weren't happy with you and didn't discuss it with you, or chose to go this route rather than work on the relationship, then that's a choice they made, and that's not really your burden. And so internalizing that experience is not healthy or helpful at all in really helping you heal from this relationship. Next is to let go of expectations and control when it comes to love. When you're in a relationship, a lot of times relationships are seen as something that you possess versus an experience that you're having. And I don't want to steal anyone's words. I actually got this understanding from Lauren London in her interview with Angie Martinez. And I thought it was so profound. I think this and believe this, but I was so happy to hear her say it because I don't think a lot of people think of relationships in this way. And so a lot of people enter a relationship with someone that they like and someone they might like their vibe. They might like their personality. And then they immediately start thinking about how they can make this person fit into their lives. Right. And we think that that's a normal way of thinking about relationships. A lot of people do, but when we start thinking like that, we start to think about how we can take what we see and mold it into something perfect for us. And that person is who they are, and they're not going to be perfect. They are imperfect humans, just like everyone in this world. And so they're not going to be a perfect mold for your life. I believe when people stop looking at relationships as someone to possess and looking at a relationship as an experience, as something that you both are experiencing together, it really changes the dynamic. And maybe there might be longer lasting relationships. I don't know that for sure, but I feel that that must be true if we're accepting people as they are, even when someone has bad habits or bad tendencies or something that is keeping them from who they desire to be or what they desire to have in their life. There's a way to talk to that person or address that with them in a loving way. And notice that I said something that they want to be or have or do. And a lot of times what we look at it, how we look at it is what we want and what we want to be and what we want to have. And so we try to fix that person to be what we want versus loving that person and being a soundboard or advising them on ways that they can achieve more what they want, right? If you know somebody wants to, I'm about to make up an example off the top of my head, which I hate doing, but say for instance, you know somebody who wants to get into a certain career field. And there's certain things that they have to do, but they're not being disciplined about it. And they don't always recognize that, you know, rather than working on studying that career path or improving their skills, this is something that they said that they want to do. They're always running off to do something else or distracting themselves with something else or avoiding actually doing it. As their partner, you should be that person who could talk to them and say, you know what? I know you said that this is something important that you wanted to achieve, you know, but every time you kind of get close to taking care of the things that you need to take care of, you kind of find these distractions. That is helping someone who's expressed to you what they want and what their journey is, right? And that's very different from someone who, you know, is doing things that you just like, I don't want my partner doing that. I don't want to be with somebody who does this or does that. My partner needs to be like this and that and that and that. And it's like, that is not healthy, not for them or for you, to put someone under that pressure or to feel such dissatisfaction or entitlement to someone that you didn't create, you know, to have all these expectations of. I feel like there has to be further conversation about like standards and expectations in relationships, because I don't want to give the impression that I'm saying there should be none, that you should have no standards and you should have no expectations. I'm not saying that. I think that it is important to have standards, but I also think that you have to know that you're not going to get a perfect person. And you also have to know that just because someone has a lot of the qualities that you like in your partner or a lot of, meets a lot of those standards, that that doesn't mean you get, you know, free rein to make them perfect and fit all of your standards just because they're as close as it gets. You know what I mean? And that's what I feel like a lot of people do. I feel like what we're really talking about is ego, right? And relationship is really the one place where your ego does not belong. And just a quick word about ego. Like, I don't think it's to have an ego is all bad. It can be useful in some environments and situations, but it's just never useful in a relationship. I'd have never seen an example of how having an ego has been great for a relationship and improving a relationship. So the next one is you have to completely let go of the past so you can make space for something else. And I think fear of letting letting go is because you don't think you can find better or deserve more, which is a self-worth issue, right? We really have to love ourselves enough to let go of the past and move forward. Letting go is an actual act of self-love. Next is knowing your values and getting very clear about what you want in a partner. And looking at yourself as well and asking yourself how you can embody the things that you want in a partner. So let's talk about the infamous list, right? The list that a lot of people have for what they want in a partner. You may not have it written down somewhere, but everybody has some sort of idea and some sort of list of what they want and the expectations that they have. But some of those things that they're asking for, they don't even embody in their own lives, but they want a person who has those qualities. Now, I know some people might say, well, if we're talking about men and women, right? We're talking about heterosexual, you know, cisgendered relationships. If we're talking about that, they are not going to be the same and the expectations shouldn't be the same. And that might be true in some cases, right? But if, for instance, you're on your list is you want somebody who works out and eats healthy, but you don't work out and eat healthy, that doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Because a person who works out and eats healthy is probably looking for a person who works out and eats healthy because that is more compatible to their lifestyle. And what you're asking for isn't compatible to your lifestyle. You understand what I'm saying? So those things are some of the things that I'm talking about. We're asking for, you know, wanting someone who, you know, has their finances together and makes a lot of money, you know, which is the ask that we hear a lot of the time. But if you don't know how to manage money, why would someone with money get with you who has bad money habits, doesn't save, spends a lot? That doesn't even make sense why a person would want to partner with someone who doesn't understand money. Now, does that mean that that partner is looking for someone who makes a lot of money? Is that maybe not? You know what I mean? They may not. That might not be the same. They might not be identical where they're like, okay, well, I make this much money. I want somebody who makes this much money. But at the very least, they probably want somebody who understands something about finances, has some good personal financial habits, understand that money is not just for spending, because some people just want a rich partner so that they can spend their money, right? Like, these are things you want to be thinking about. When I say that you want to look at yourself and see how you can embody the things that you want in a partner. If you want a partner who is making a certain amount of money and you want to be able to not work as much or, you know, be able to spend more time with your kids, you know, should y'all have kids together, you want to be able to do that and they, you know, make the majority of the money, then what you need to embody is someone who knows how to manage money or understand something about investing, multiplying money, creating a legacy, understanding a trust, understanding stocks, you know, investing. Those might be great qualities that a person who has that kind of wealth or has that kind of money might be attracted to. So that's what I mean by embodying the thing. Some of it is literal and some of it is adjacent. What kind of partner would you be to the partner that you want? And also, I also think it's important to give it to yourself first before looking for someone else who will give it to you. So while I gave you an example about, you know, someone who makes money, I think it's very important for everyone to be self-sufficient, whether you're man or woman. I think that self-sufficiency is important. And I identify self-sufficiency very different from independence. I do not think it's the same. Self-sufficiency is just about being able to take care of yourself and provide yourself with your basic needs. Basic needs like food, shelter, and clothing. Like, you should be able to do that on your own. That's being self-sufficient. But independent as in not needing anyone else's support in your life, that I don't agree with. While you may not need someone to financially provide everything for you, it doesn't mean that you don't need people and you don't need help and you don't need support from people in many different ways and many different areas of your life. So I think those things are very different, but I think that self-sufficiency is very important. By self-sufficiency and looking at yourself, giving it to yourself before you expect anyone to give it to you, or also just like looking at how you can embody the things that you want in a partner, this is how you start to create a standard and one that you actually deserve. You know, if you want a better partner, think about how you can become a better listener. You know, examples, I'm just giving some examples of embodying the partner that you want. How can you become a better listener? How can I be in integrity with my own worth? How can I maintain boundaries? How can I be more patient? Those are characteristics that you want to consider. Those are just examples, but you know, think of the things that you can embody what you want in a partner. Next is to become emotionally available, because you may be attracting emotionally unavailable partners because it feels familiar, but you can't keep doing that and expect that you won't become or aren't already an emotionally unavailable person. Being with an emotionally unavailable person can create fears of opening yourself up. And if you don't trust yourself, you may not be able to trust your own discernment. You have to be willing to open up again in order for a new partner or a person that you deserve and who is deserving of you can come into your life. So that's it, guys. I think that was about seven tips. I didn't really number these, but I think there are about seven tips on how you can heal and raise your vibration after a breakup. If you like this episode, please rate and subscribe. And I will see you guys in the next episode. Later.